Good evening, everybody, and welcome back. It is episode 2, Matt.
That is right.
Of the faculty room. Can you
Unbelievable. Some amazing response. We really appreciate the feedback we got on episode 1. Hopefully episode 2 is that much better.
Yeah, and if you forget, I'm Mike Azzalina. I'm one half of the host, not the expert, but the host of Faculty Room, and this is my buddy, Matt Rogers.
That's right. Good evening, everyone. Excited to have you back.
Yeah, we're so excited. Matt mentioned it, to have all that positive feedback, and we're thrilled tonight because I had my first interaction with a man that I have immense amounts of respect for just after my half an hour conversation with him, Mr. Ken Ehrman. We are very excited to be bringing you that interview here in a little bit. Our topic tonight is centered around that first couple weeks into the first month of school. So we're talking leading into the school year. We're talking getting yourself prepped and ready, and then when those kids walk through your door on that first day and through that first month, that feeling and that excitement of what's to come and how we have approached that in our careers. And we're going to talk to Ken about the way he approaches that. But Matt, we're almost a month in, man.
That's right.
What's going on?
I know. I'm beyond a month. We started middle of August, and it's unbelievable that we're done 4 weeks already. For some of the teachers that just started, I'm only slightly jealous, but otherwise, we're getting into what I say is out of the procedure realm and into the teaching stuff. So that's when things get nice and smooth. We have routines and things are looking pretty. But when talking about this whole concept of beginning of the school year, unfortunately, you start 2, 3, maybe even 4 weeks before the kids step into that classroom. And this summer, like every other summer, it seems, I left last year having everything organized. I purged. I spent all this time thinking my classroom was going to be ready when I opened it the 1st of August. And I probably spent 8-10 full days there. Redid every single bulletin board. Why? I want to say I don't know, but the truth is it has to be perfect. It has to be right, and it has to match the theme and the passion of the year. So once you get through those first few days and it is quiet, and it's not necessarily the worst thing to have your own space and to be putting things up and trying new things, then the little guys start showing up and everything you have organized is all over the place. First weeks of school are crazy. How about you, Mike?
You know, I it's a little bit different for me now. I spend the entire summer in the building at this point, and that was new to me this year, and it was quiet, and it was eerie, and it was, you know, exciting to have the opportunity to plan with Dr. Crane and sit and really discuss with our new dean of students what our approach is going to be this year. But the real excitement for me was when I started to see the teachers come back into the building and set up their classrooms and going in and checking in and seeing how they were doing. That was exciting. As a teacher, I remember exactly what you said. I had everything organized, everything where I wanted it to be, thinking when I come in, I'm going to be able to pull it out and my classroom's going to be done in a day. And then I remembered I had to do this and I had to do this. And my list kept growing and growing and growing and growing. And every time I crossed something off, I added 5 more things. And, you know, before you know it, the kids are coming, the kids are coming. And honestly, nothing else mattered because all I wanted was for those kids to walk through the door. And, you know, you said it's been over a month for you. We are just about at that point where we're hitting a month. So, you know, I guess my question is, as you reflect on your first month, almost month and a half, Matt, how are you doing? What's it been like? Where are you at?
Well, I think it's funny. When setting up that classroom, my biggest concern, maybe it's the thing that I was holding off the longest, was magnets in my classroom. Such a silly thing, but it's those type things that are your big deal in the summer. And I wish that was my big deal all year long, but lunch count or folder colors associated with what's special and seat back covers. And something about my classroom, I went and I found every open table that was available in the entire building, and I replaced all my desks. So that was part of the days of lugging every desk to storage and replacing it with tables and figuring out caddies and shared materials. But once those kids show up, I think Ken will talk about relationships better than I ever can. But one thing I've always struggled, but am starting, I want to say maybe a false sense of success, of getting the right relationship with kids, because we definitely know that concept. And if you don't know, not smiling until Christmas is not a real thing, especially in the elementary level. I know that's a old tale of you don't smile till Christmas or you won't make it till May.
Please, yes, smile. Please. Please smile.
And there's a difference. There is definitely, I've done the super fun hip teacher that gets walked all over. I've gone the route of so strict that my kids are not fond of me and will not open up and share their needs. And I can't address them. So we're finally getting to that point of I can play the stern serious when I need to be serious and caring and supportive when that's necessary. So it only took 9 years, but we're getting there. So, but it's interesting. And I know going into education, we always want to entertain. We always want to appeal. We want to have interest of our kids. But we'll talk about it a ton. Is our focus being friends? No, our focus is being an authority, but also an instructor. And if anything's staying in the way or in the way of them learning, we have to make sure we kind of realign our focus. So with that being said, my kids are amazing this year. They're so awesome. I've got such a great group of kids and very tolerant. They are very malleable in the sense of transition from serious to fun. You'll definitely have a variety, a roller coaster style group of some kids can handle certain things, some can't. And I'm very pleased to say that this year I have just one of the best classes, I'll say a month in. We'll see in a few months if I'm still saying the same thing, but a pretty great group. So
yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I think back, this was a year that I had a lot of time to prepare for the school year and really just wrap my head around how we were going to approach it. And one of the things that Dr. Crane and I did with some teachers, even we walked around the community and we went and we knocked on doors and we saw our kids and spent time this summer just reconnecting. And actually, I shouldn't even call it reconnecting. I should call it continuing connections, because we had built these connections with students. And, you know, when they go away for 2.5 months, you know, you don't want that connection to be lost. So in preparation for the year, we continued the connection that we originally had built with them. So as they came in this school year, and it never felt like they left. As they're walking into breakfast on day one, it was almost like the school year never ended, because they had seen me walking around on Prince Street or wherever I was with my bright blue t-shirt on, knocking on doors and yelling, "Hey, Price Panthers," like, you know, that sort of thing. So, you know, this school year and coming into it felt really positive and controlled. And last year for me in that position for the first time, it felt almost out of control. So, you know, I this year I feel like I'm doing really well. I walk around the building and I'm proactive with being dojo. I'm in every classroom dojo, so I'm giving out points left and right in the buildings because we're school wide dojo. So, you know, it feels more flowed this year than previous years. I feel like my head's on straight completely. And you know, you're right. Through the course of a year, I'm sure there are going to be times where you and I talk either on air or off air, and it's going to be, "Matt, I don't know where my head went. I'm losing my mind." It happens to all of us, and that's important to know. But, you know, you said it best. Building those relationships and those connections will help to keep us on track. And I'm going to kind of turn the tables a little bit here, because you know, I think as we think about the beginning of the school year, and we reflect on our careers, there are going to be those pieces, maybe early on in our career, maybe just last year, maybe even just this month, where we flubbed, or there's something funny that happened, or the dreaded horror story, as you will, occurred to you. So I'm going to ask you, and if you don't have one off the top of your head, just shoot it back to me, because I've already got one.
I got one. Well, I think the biggest flub is, and I mentioned it earlier, is being too stern. I had a group. I had a year where I taught 29, we call them learners, but students, in one classroom, and I loved it. I loved having 29 learners, and it was phenomenal. And the next year, I went down to 22. What I will say, the biggest improvement was not the fact that less kids to manage and it was an easier task, because 22, 23 doesn't make that much of a difference. Grading was so much smoother, but that group of 22 had more need, I'll say a little more immaturity of the fourth grade variety. And that immaturity led itself to just needing constant guidance and prompting to be on track. And my biggest regret is that I didn't let them be kids enough. And I took them a little too seriously, that we do a teacher report card at the end of the year, and it'll stick with me forever. I went in with this mentality of knowing it was a tough group, and I treated them as a tough group instead of creating my own perspective of them. And I did not give them enough of a leash to fall down and me guide them into the right direction. So that's the tough part. And I think for a brand new teacher, making those decisions first thing. And I remember I had been teaching for 4 years at that point, but I transitioned from special ed into regular ed, and realizing I needed these, what people called policies, thought out, this theme, these ways to pull kids together thought out, and I didn't have them. And it's so critical to A, see kids as who they are and not how you've heard of them before. One thing I've learned, by the way, is don't read an IEP until you've met a kid, unless it's a health concern. But the other thing is that you create your own community. And I'll say that I will always be disappointed that I did not create enough of a community. How do you make up for it? In future, you make an adjustment and you realize, unfortunately, I wasn't that right teacher for that group. Hopefully someone else got them along the way before and after, but I'm going to make sure that I am what they need going forward. So that's a long, lengthy, very maybe sappy, sad version of it. But I guess, Mike, what is your interesting beginning into teaching and your first impressions with kids?
So my first year was my eventful story, as you will. And it was one day, and I remember it like it was yesterday. It was my second week, it was a Tuesday, and we were doing language arts, and I remember that overwhelming feeling of having to get everything in, you know, having to get the curriculum, having to make sure I was fitting in all these standards and everything that was given to me in the pacing guide. And because that's what everybody was telling me. And I think what was left off the table was, you can't do that until you have your community. You can't do that until you have your relationships. Because I'm watching these students almost rebel against me, pushing back really hard on what I'm trying to do. And I'm thinking to myself, I didn't experience this during my student teaching. What is going on? And finally, one of my students, he raised his hand and he looks at me and he said, "You realize we're in second grade?" And I was like, at that moment, it hit me, Matt. Like it hit me that I had been so caught up in the stuff that shouldn't have mattered at that point. And I'm not saying that the actual instruction of what we do isn't important. That's not what I'm trying to convey. What I'm conveying, and it's basically the same thing Matt said, is I forgot that the relational part is really what the kids care about. Because if I can do that, then the instruction is going to come. It's going to happen naturally. And I had forgotten that. That was something that was really successful for me in student teaching. But I got away from it because I was so concerned with making sure I fit everything in, even though it was the beginning of the year. So I had done my routines. I had done my procedures. I was getting right into content. And I forgot to build relationships. But I look back at that group and I still have their photo in my office. And it was probably one of my best classes. Once I took a step back and really built those connections, everything fell into place. And I think, Matt, that's really what's great about our guest tonight, is that that's what he's about. Like, that's what Ken's about. Absolutely. Right?
Absolutely. I think that you bring it up really well. You're going to hear over and over that not only do kids have a voice in the classroom, a really strong voice, but Ken's not afraid to give up control as long as it fits his main criteria of being good for kids. And
from day one, right? Like it's from day one. And that's really what I think you will all appreciate about what you're about to hear. So Matt, I think without further ado, should we do it?
Let's get into it.
Should we give it to him? Our first guest.
That's right.
Let's get to it.
Mr. Ken Ehrman, let's go. All right, everyone. We are super excited to have a incredibly special guest joining us tonight on the faculty room. His name is Ken Ehrman. He teaches in suburban Philadelphia, which is perfect. It's kind of the middle ground between Mike teaching urban and myself teaching rural, but really excited to have Ken Ehrman, a fifth grade teacher in Penridge School. So you want to say hello?
Hey, how you doing? I'm really excited to be here.
Perfect.
It's quite an honor to be your first guest.
I know. Well, I think the whole theme of the podcast, I know Ken and Mike have talked as obviously you're hearing the podcast already, the theme of the beginning of the school year is not only one of the toughest times of the school year, but it's one of those times where you feel like you have to have everything thought out, and no better person than someone who really thrives at setting up a plan and carrying it throughout the year than you. So I kind of want to start with the main question that we ask all of our guests, well, I'll say future guests will be asked, is what is that reason behind you choosing to take your talents and bring it to education? And then a follow-up after that is, obviously things have changed since you've been teaching for a while. Why do you remain a teacher after what you've learned through the profession?
So I actually, I always wanted to be a teacher as long as I can remember. When I was in elementary school, probably third or fourth grade, I think my mom has an essay I wrote where I said I wanted to be a gym teacher. I played sports year round, so I loved playing sports, and I figured, hey, I could teach kids how to play sports for a living. That would be pretty cool. And then when I was in sixth grade, I had my favorite teacher ever, Mr. Cashman, who is a principal now still locally where I live. And he really changed my perspective on what teaching is, the value in teaching. I don't really remember any specific lessons that he ever taught me, but I remember how he made me feel and how he made everybody feel and how it just was an exciting place to go. It was a fun place to go. He had a great sense of humor. And from that moment on, I realized I wanted to be an elementary school teacher. And as I went through middle school and high school, I took every opportunity to kind of make sure I really did want to, working with kids. And it just never changed for me. You know, I don't know what the original gravitation was, but it's just always been a goal of mine. And I still love it to this day. And, you know, for me, I think it's that same goal that I've had since I had Mr. Cashman, to just make the kids feel special and make them love coming to school. And when they love to come to school, everything else is easy. And, you know, they're with you for 180 days. You might as well make it awesome. You might as well make it special for them, because during those 180 days, they're in the classroom more than they're at home. And so it really needs to be a special place for them.
That's the precipice of what we would hope every educator has moving into a school year. And Ken, I know Matt spoke to a little bit to your district, but if you could just give the listeners a little bit more insight into your district profile and you know the demographic and what you have in terms of access to technology and so on.
So as Matt said, I'm in a suburb of Philadelphia. I'm in the Penn Ridge School District. So it's Upper Bucks County. So we're about an hour from the city of Philadelphia. We stretch towards the rural areas, but we definitely are still a suburb. We're a rather large district. We have 7 elementary schools, 3 middle schools, and 1 high school. My elementary school in particular, M.M. Seiler Elementary, we have about 400 students, and that's about the average population of the 7 elementary schools. Our demographic, we have a very supportive group of parents district-wide. They really value education. Schools vary in terms of the socioeconomic levels. Some of our schools have a higher percentage of free and reduced lunch. Some are close to 70%, while others are at about 30%, just depending on the homes that are traveling to those schools. In terms of technology, our high school has been one-to-one with PCs for a couple of years now. At the elementary level, we have just a piecemeal offering of PCs and iPads. In my classroom in particular, I have 10 laptops and 3 iPads for 30 students. So nowhere near one-to-one. Jealous of everybody that's one-to-one. But, you know, we have good availability that allows the students, if crafted properly, I can get them on devices every day for a specific purpose. But definitely a challenge at the same time when I know I could run a one-to-one classroom, but I just don't have the opportunity yet.
And I think one of those, the shared device environments is a lot of times more headache than worth. Do you feel like those resources are spread evenly, or do you kind of end up dominating those resources because it is such a hassle to manage not having usernames or what have you?
Well, luckily our students do have, they have specific usernames to log into devices. We do have the G Suite availability for all the students. So we do have good access in that way. My principal in particular for the last few years has decided to take the lump sum of devices and place them into classrooms, whereas other schools have a lot of carts available where you can get a class set, but you have to hope that it's available. Whereas his thinking behind splitting the devices up was, you know, teachers can plan for 10 every day or 5 every day, and it becomes a part of instruction. And we do have a couple carts available where I can have a class set, you know, when I specifically need it. So it is a headache at times, especially as I become more and more dependent on it with the way I teach and the way I instruct. But you just learn to make do. It just becomes a part of your daily planning.
So I guess the next thing I want to go into is a part of this podcast is really taking us from so you talked a little bit about your upbringing, the passion that's obviously there behind you. I know you went to Shippensburg University, obviously prepared you pretty well. Can you kind of transition from Shippensburg into those first few years of teaching, and how did that pre-service training benefit you? What would you have wanted to know that you didn't? Any of those kind of nuggets that you could share with the audience?
Yeah, Shippensburg was great for me. I think I really got a great education there. The biggest thing I think is for pre-service educators to get into classrooms as much as possible, and don't just go to observe. You really have to get involved. You know, my senior year, the first semester, we would go to the classroom that we would student teach in the following semester twice a week. And I told the teacher the first day, I said, I want to do as much as I possibly can. And so I was running centers. I was teaching before student teaching even began. And as soon as student teaching started, I was teaching the whole day within a week when it was supposed to be a transition of subject by subject. So you really just have to get involved and learn how to interact with kids at different age levels. When I was student teaching, I volunteered to work at a before school reading program because it was second and third graders, and I was student teaching in fifth. And I was certified K to six. So I wanted experience with second and third graders, and I was spending my lunch break working in the kindergarten classroom just to see what it was like to work with the kindergarten students. So really trying to get as much valuable experience as you can, and you can't just depend on what the university is providing you. You really need to seek out every opportunity you can for yourself, because not only will you expose yourself to more, but you will kind of develop a good grit in seeking things, and that's what you're going to need to get a job. You're going to need that grit to seek those opportunities out.
That's perfect. I hear when you say you're jumping into these different opportunities throughout that student teaching experience and giving yourself as much exposure to the different classroom settings as you can. I feel like that would be a great opportunity for you or for any pre-service teacher to see what your main priorities would be in your own classroom. So, you know, as Matt and I talk a little bit tonight in this episode about beginning of the year and processing what those priorities would be, can you walk us through when you're setting up your year to come, what those main priorities are for you?
Absolutely. So, you know, your first couple of years as a teacher, your main priority is just, you know, knowing everything that you need to know in terms of, you know, your school policies, you know, having a good working relationship with your supervisors. But, you know, after a couple of years, when you feel more comfortable, and it's always been a priority since my first year, is developing relationships. And it starts with the parents or the families and the kids. And one piece of advice somebody gave me years ago, I think it was even maybe while I was in college, was to connect with every parent before the school year. And a lot of teachers will send postcards over the summer once the class lists are announced. I call every household before the school year. And it's a short, simple conversation. I just tell them that I'm really excited to have, you know, their daughter or their son in my classroom. Maybe something that I'm really excited about, and just to tell the parents that if they need anything at any time, that I'm always available through email or through phone calls, and that, you know, working in a partnership is my top priority. And a lot of times I get probably 50% of them are voicemails, and 50% I actually connect with the person over the phone. But I've already established a positive connection with every parent before the school year. And so when that, you know, that phone call that you have to make because Johnny's goofing off at lunch or a recess or whatever, they always happen. That's the second phone call. My first phone call is never calling them to tell them their son or daughter got in trouble or did this or did that. And so that positive connection is already there. And, you know, as I've progressed farther with that connection, I really focus on that at open house or back to school night. This year, for the first time, I didn't talk about any procedures at back to school night. You know, a lot of teachers, most teachers, and this isn't, you know, knocking them at all, will talk about homework policy and how many minutes you have to read at night and, you know, where the homework is posted and what subjects we teach and what the units are. And, you know, it's a lot of information, one, for the parents to comprehend. But two, I truly believe that they don't care about all of that. They are there to feel you out and see who their son or daughter is going to be with for 180 days. And so this year I focused on my philosophies, what I believe in, what's important to me, why this year is going to be special for their kids, and really just focused on having the parents leave feeling excited for their son or their daughter to be in my classroom every day. And I still provided all the information they needed. I just videotaped myself with all the procedural stuff and sent it home. And the other reason I did that is a lot of parents miss back to school night. And, maybe some just skip it, but a lot probably can't make it because they're working a second job, or because they work night shift, or because they can't get a babysitter. And so, you know, I want to try to connect with every parent as much as possible. And so that beginning of the school year for me is, like I said, is making the relationships valuable. And one is the parent and the other is the student. And so, you know, what are you going to do in the beginning of the school year to have your students leave running home, telling their parents or their aunts or uncles, I cannot wait to go back to school tomorrow? That is what they need on the first day of school. They don't need the procedures, like I just said. They don't need the math workbook sitting on their desk. They don't need agendas sitting on their desk. They need to know that their teacher is awesome and that they're going to have fun and feel safe that year. And so I've always focused on that. And I've always tried to have the kids feel like the classroom is not mine, but it is ours. And, you know, I always did a lot to make them feel that way. And the last 2 years, I've really changed the way I set up my classroom. And it nails that in their head on day one. They walk into my classroom and it is not set up at all. Last year, it was 30 desks piled in the center with chairs piled on top. And this year it was empty.
That's awesome.
And we spend the first week of school setting up our classroom. And I, you know, I facilitate, I guide, I provide them with good questions to answer and, you know, help them kind of piece the puzzle together. But I can honestly say that last year they made most of the decisions, and this year doing it for the second time, they made 100% of the decisions of everything placed in the room except my bookshelf. I don't have a desk anymore. I have a bookshelf. And so I own, I guess, 1% of the square footage in my room. And for the last 2 years, my students have elected to design a flexible classroom. You know, that's kind of a totally different topic. A flexible classroom, they get to choose their own seats. They don't have assigned seats. But to have the students design the classroom, you don't have to have a flexible classroom. They could design a traditional classroom where they do have desks and they do have assigned seats, but they still get to decide on the layout of the room. You know, if I taught first grade, would I have them design the whole room? I would probably try it because I like trying crazy things. But, you know, maybe you let them design the center area. Or maybe you let them design the back area of the room where you have the carpet and you have the beanbags and you have the reading centers. So maybe you let them design a little bit of it. But, you know, trying to give the students as much ownership as possible really just invigorates them to love that classroom because it's theirs. And so that's my first week is having the parents excited and having the kids excited about where they're going to spend their entire school year.
That's amazing. And I think that I know flexible seating, we'd love to have you on in the future to talk further about it. I'm sure if you're willing, but.
Yeah, I would love to. I purposely didn't go into detail there because that would just be another, you know, that's a whole episode in itself.
Absolutely.
like I said, the students can set up a traditional classroom. They don't have to set up a flexible classroom.
Absolutely. And I think that ownership, again, I've heard of people bringing elements, but I just cannot imagine what faces look like when they walk in an empty classroom on the first day of school. Or I believe you've told me that that's how you have it's set up for parents as well.
Yeah, because our back to school night is our week of in-service before the first day of school.
Oh, man.
So the parents are actually walking into an empty classroom. And I don't really explain it for about the first half hour because they're coming in and they're, you know, filling out some paperwork to get emails and that kind of stuff. And so they're kind of just looking around at some stools and some chairs to sit on. And 2 years ago, it was a giant pile of desks in the center of the room. So it's kind of funny to see that. And I explained it to the parents, you know, why, and they love the idea and they can't wait to see, you know, they can't wait to see what they create.
Now, I guess my question is, So it is important to have that conversation with parents ahead of time. I think it's a phenomenal idea. I love the idea of doing it even before the school year starts. I do it the first week of school. Hey, here's a reflection of how I feel your child's kind of gelling in this classroom environment. But I love the idea beforehand. What ways do you continue conversation that you set up at the beginning of the year that allow you to share the amazing things going on? Is it a strictly email? Is it a an app like a Remind or a Blooms? What way do you use to be in contact with parents?
Parent communication is one of the most important aspects of our job, K through 12, without a doubt, and especially definitely more heavily at the elementary level, because you're with a smaller group of students more often. But regardless, your form of communication is so important. And I think that's something that pre-service and new teachers need to hear and need to know. It is a top priority, because when you have good communication, it will make your year a lot easier. When those problems come up with the students or with the parents, when you have that open line of communication and it's positive, it will make everything a lot easier. So as I said, I call the families in the beginning of the year to establish that positive rapport. And I have two main forms of communication. I send home a weekly email. I usually try to get it out by the end of the day on Monday. And it's very simple, and it's all business. It's a little intro sentence, and it breaks down, subject by subject, math, no updates, social studies. There's a test on Friday. The study guide is going home today. Here's the PDF of it. Science, there's most likely going to be a quiz next Wednesday. Look for the study guide by the end of the week. Reading, make sure you're logging your minutes, that kind of stuff. Important school reminders, important dates. Very simple. It's bulleted. It is not fancy. The subjects are bold and it's bullets underneath. And it's very simple for parents to read, see, and know what they need to help out with or keep an eye out for the week. And then my other form of communication is using a class Facebook page. I think this is my third year, maybe my fourth. And it's a Facebook page. It's public for parents to see. In our district, our students sign media release forms to use all the technology, and it also allows us to post pictures. So if there were any student that didn't have that signed, I just have to make sure they're not in the pictures I post. But it's public, and the reason I have it set that way is parents with and without Facebook can all view the page. Parents without Facebook can't like pictures, they can't comment, that kind of stuff. So my Facebook page is pure fun. I tell them from the beginning, I will not communicate anything important that they need to know through Facebook. Look for videos, look for pictures, look for stories about what we did. And it's so easy. It's in my hands all day. It's a phone. I take out my phone. I go to the class. I go to the Facebook page app. I pull it up, take a couple pictures, take a couple videos, write about what they're doing, post, and I've communicated with parents that day. I used to do newsletters, and it just became really cumbersome to send them out weekly or biweekly, making sure I was collecting photos, making sure I remembered what the photos were for, trying to remember all the cool stuff that we did. There's stuff that happens so often. And there's weeks where I might post 5 times in 2 days, and then I don't post again for 4 days. And it's okay. It doesn't matter. There's nothing consistent about it, because if the parents have Facebook, they follow the page and they just get notifications or it's in their news feed. And I've had other parents that don't have Facebook and they tell me it's their Friday routine. Mom and dad would sit down every Friday and just scroll through the page until they got to the post that they had seen before. And so they love to see it there. And it's just such a positive way to communicate with parents. They want to see what their kids are doing. They're not there for 7 hours. They want to see their kids. They don't care if it's cutting, if it's drawing, if it's driving robots, typing on a computer. They just want to see their children. And it just makes such a positive impact for them, especially, they might get that notification midday and see that picture or that video. I do a lot of media with my kids. I take a lot of videos. It's a passion of mine, but even if I wasn't good at video editing and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't matter because I can just take a couple short video clips, a couple pictures and post it. And so, you know, my parents have a really fun way of seeing the classroom, and it helps you. It's positive PR. Your parents, you know, they like the classroom more. They like what they see. And they also have a very simple but valuable business form of communication as well.
And I think through the inspiration of what you brought to, I guess, the table for me, I started doing it as well. And it's interesting. I'm doing it in a, we'll say, exploratory way, because my district's not as favorable or comfortable with using Facebook as parent communication as opposed to a dedicated educational tool. And right. What's amazing that I'm seeing already 4 weeks into school at this point is that I'm getting parents where they're already at, as opposed to them trying to log onto an app or check something that they're not comfortable or have a single sole purpose to use.
Exactly. And that was my initial motivation. I was using Twitter, and I love using Twitter for connecting with professionals, but I never had one parent like anything on Twitter. I never had one parent say anything about what I posted on Twitter. I tried Remind, I tried all different kinds of apps, and they were fine and they worked, but it wasn't fast and easy for me. And it was kind of clouding the business versus the fun. And my first year of using Facebook, I can see all the parents liking the photos and videos. And I had probably 7 or 8 parents specifically say to me in person, "Thank you for using Facebook. I love seeing everything you're posting." And as soon as they said that, I said, "This is a done deal. I'm doing it every year."
Well, I think I had the chance, and I know you had the chance of hearing Tom Murray speak. And mm-hmm. one of the things, Tom Murray, for those who don't know, is he is doing a ton of touring right now, but he is an outstanding educational advocate and speaker. But he talks about the idea of hitting parents where they already are, and the concept of, if he gets a notification from his daughter's teacher, it could be any time of the day, he stops everything for the 2 minutes it takes to check in and see what's going on and the impact it has on him as a traveling father, let alone what opportunity and insight that goes back to the dining room table at the end of the day, which is just incredible. So I kind of want to continue to talk about, obviously you have some special things, and if you're not aware, Ken is an amazing educator, so much so that he is currently nominated, I guess, top 10 for Pennsylvania Department of Education Teacher of the Year, which I guess you'll hear about in December,
in
correct?
In December, yep.
So hopefully we whittle that down to one and we can rename the podcast PA Department of Ed Teacher of the Year, but
bring him back on.
Yeah, absolutely. Super impressive, obviously, but it makes total sense with the passion and I think the drive, the student engagement. When we go to Danielson's model, everything in your classroom.
And to connect with what you're saying, the original nomination that came, that started this path towards becoming a finalist, my classroom 2 years ago, every parent in the homeroom nominated me for it. So one of the parents set it up, and so the 27 parents that I had, or families, they were all on the nomination form for me to start the application process. So that was where the original nomination came from, which I think kind of speaks to, that's the most special part for me, is that, you know, is where it started. And I think it, you know, speaks to, you know, that effort I make to form that connection with the student and with the family.
And it starts at day one. It really starts with
before
day one and runs. And that's the thing. I'm sure it runs beyond right. just that 180. And I'm sure now your building, is it K-5 or K-6?
Correct. K-5.
All right. So you are the last experience. You are the king of the castle style teacher.
Yep.
Which is also an impression. It's an incredibly important year to be the lasting memory for both parents and their children as well. So can you talk to us just briefly again? We hope to have you on when the crown is on top of your head, but mainly what are some other things just briefly that you do incorporate inside your classroom, things you do outside your classroom to give some perspective of, hey, us teachers don't just teach a reading lesson for 40 minutes and move on to math.
Yeah, I've become very passionate about using STEM and technology over the last few years. I've won a couple of grants. Matt's great at writing grants, and he's motivated me to do so. So I'm fortunate to have a couple 3D printers in my room, some Sphero and Ozobot robots, and just getting the kids hands-on with that stuff and, you know, looking how to integrate it into the classroom as much as possible. And outside of teaching, I teach graduate courses for PD Campus in the Bucks and Lehigh Valley area, focusing on iPad and Google integration. And also, as Matt has stated before, I work with him for STEMCamp EDU, which is a phenomenal professional development event for educators. It's the best one they'll ever attend. I put my name behind that. And it's really just about meeting educators, meeting different people. You know, Matt and I met through a professional development event, the Keystone Technology Integrators. We formed a bond and a friendship there, but also a professional relationship, and that has stemmed into others. And it just really helps you learn, and it just helps you realize what's out there and what's possible. And, you know, I see Matt do something, I'm like, oh, that looks cool. Like, yeah, I might not even ask him how he does it. I just look at the end result and then maybe take my own path towards it. But it really opens your eyes into what is possible as an educator. And it all just stems back to the students. Every decision you make should always be, will this benefit my students? Will this make their experience better? Not will this raise their test scores, but will this make their experience better? And if you make decisions in the best interest of students, you've always made the right decision.
100%. Could not agree more. And Ken, I see here, this is the first time that Ken and I have ever had any communication with one another. And my admiration for everything that you're saying and the things that you do and your philosophies and beliefs behind what makes a successful classroom and community is growing by the second. So I want to personally thank you for joining us and being our first official guest. Before I throw this last question your way here, we have our target here is to really prepare the new teacher for the classroom. And when we have a guest with the experience and the knowledge and the passion that you have, we think it's really important that they hear the advice that you have. So if you could take all of that experience and knowledge and passion and try and sum it up into some advice for any new teacher who's preparing to go out into our field, just go ahead and share what that would be for them.
The school year is going to be crazy. It comes and goes. Conferences come. It becomes crazy. There's report card deadlines. Your district is going to push new curriculums, new programs. But at the end of the day, you close your door or you leave your door open, and it's the kids in there with you and nobody else. And they look to you every day, and you need to do what's best for them. You know, you have to make sure that you obviously are doing what is expected, but you have to make the decisions that you know are best for your students. And, you know, always keep them in mind when you're lesson planning, when you're looking for new ideas. And take risks. Take risks in front of your students and tell them you're taking a risk. Tell them you're trying something new and you have no idea if it's going to work or not. And when it doesn't work, they think it's hilarious and you don't do it again. And when it does work, then you continue to use it. Just be real. Kids are K to 12, not just the older kids, but K to 12. Those kids are really perceptive and they know when you're being real. They know when you're being honest. And if they know for real, that you do love them and that you do care about them, everything else is easy. That relationship is so important, that relationship with the families and the relationship with the kids. Classroom management, when you become a little bit more experienced and you're real with the students, it's not about clip-up charts. It's not about seating charts. It's not about discipline. It's just about the connections. You know, it's when they respect you and they care about you because you know you respect and care about them, classroom management doesn't really become a topic anymore. And when classroom management's not a topic anymore, the learning becomes so much easier and everything else flows from there. And so just be honest and be real with them and make those connections from day one.
Amazing. Again, Ken, I think we really appreciate having you on because it's always great to have people that have similar mindsets in the same room. And I think especially for the demographic we're going after what's cool is as we're doing this, we're realizing that that demographic is a lot larger than just maybe future teachers. But I think that our conversation brings back kind of like a little bit more of a fire for me to go back in tomorrow and bring a lot of these passion items into my classroom. So thank you for being on. We really appreciate it. Obviously, hopefully we are able to have you in the future, talk about some other things. I know
I would love to.
You've done some amazing things with 3D printing and kids all through the hallways and your robotics and some amazing things. And obviously, we'll hope to keep you in mind come December as we're hopefully celebrating a pretty special evening.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for being on. We can't say thank you enough.
Yeah, thank you.
Ken. We really appreciate it.
Excited to come on, and I'll always be your first official guest.
Ken, before you go, I know you shared some incredible things, and besides having you on in the future, we'd love, as part of this podcast, I know Mike mentioned it last time, to reach out and share, ask questions, get more feedback, expand conversation. So what would be the best way to get in contact with you going forward?
Absolutely. I would love to have conversations with anyone interested and even to share ideas with me. So I would say the best way to reach me is on Twitter. My handle is at Ken Ehrmann. So it's KenEhrmann, at Ken Ehrmann. I'm on LinkedIn as well, but Twitter is definitely my most frequent point of use. Follow me, send me a direct message or something. I'd love to connect, talk about flexible seating, talk about communication, really just talk about anything that you would be interested in. I'm always looking to connect with new educators.
And we'll make sure to link you as we tweet it out. So if you have anything, please reach out again. That's the whole purpose of this podcast is making every classroom we touch hopefully a little bit better.
Yeah, so we can link my class Facebook page as well so people can see what that looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be a great idea. So again, can't say thank you enough, and we appreciate your time.
Excellent. Thank you.
Wow, Matt. I mean, I don't know if we could have drawn up a better first guest.
Seriously, that was, I mean, talk about summing up exactly everything that we stand for. Ken just nailed it, so.
I don't know if we took his 3D printer and actually created something. It would have come out as perfect as what that was.
Absolutely. Trust me, I cannot wait to have him on in the future, and please reach out to him. But I think he brought in a kind of a concept that maybe snapshots of what a month view, whether that's prior to or a month after you've started, along this lines, kind of five guidelines that we think are really the key things to remember. So Mike, you want to start us on our list?
Yeah, of course. I think we tried to take away as much as we could, but we wanted to summarize as best we could for everybody. So, number five, one thing that he said that stuck out to both of us was about his opportunities in college when he was student teaching, not just, doing the student teaching, but finding ways to golf himself into all of the different opportunities.
Number four, I think, is a huge one, not just because of the obvious factor, but I know building an admin will appreciate it too, is creating a classroom that's focused on comfort, but also heavily on safety, with procedures being as important as they are. Both having kids, I know Ken has the ability to make the classroom something that is just maybe a little more daring than you and I are comfortable with, of an empty classroom, but allowing kids to own, just absolutely own their environment, but also having that tough conversation of recognizing how it needs to be a safe and communal area is very important. So,
yeah, just making sure that your kids feel comfortable in that setting every day, because that's where they're spending their time. Number three, he spoke a lot about it, and we're going to sum it up like this. Parents matter. They really matter.
Like, really, 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 really matter.
And I loved his comment about reaching out to every parent before the year started. That's his first communication. It's not when he has to call home because Johnny's messing up daily. That's not the first communication. Now, that's number two, maybe even number three. But it's important to build that and continue that on. And his Facebook idea, meeting parents where they're at. This is where parents are. They're on Facebook, not creating another app for them to go use. But, you know, they're on Facebook. And, you know, not that the other apps, like he said, are anything that shouldn't be used. That's not the point behind what he was saying. But it was finding something that would connect him to the parents and keep that connection and allow for them to involve themselves and engage themselves in what was going on in the classroom in an accessible way.
I agree. Number two, if we could have two number ones, this would definitely fit. But number two is establishing a connection is so much more important than establishing curriculum. I had a principal tell me that she would rather us not teach curriculum for a month than try to teach curriculum in the first week. The whole concept of making kids get to know each other. I know we have those corny college icebreaker games, but getting kids talking and interacting, warmed back up to school, knowing that this is a comfortable, loving, caring place matters so much more. And as Mike told you about his story, they're going to learn so much more if they feel that comfort than if you jump right into your first reading story or practicing math facts. That connection is really what establishes from day one, and it will travel beyond 180.
And, you know, Matt, hopefully this will be number one for every guest that we bring on. You know, I mean, I think he conveyed this with such in such a natural way that without saying it, it was just there the entire time. We want you to remember that you love what you do. You do this for a reason. You do this because you love guiding students, learners, as Matt said. I love that word, guiding learners every single day. And not just learning the curriculum, but learning what it is like to actually give a handshake, learning what it is like to care about a friend, learning what it is like to make the choices that create the atmosphere in which you will live for the next 180 days. You know, these are things that slip through the cracks every now and then, but it's what we love to do, man.
And I think that's the character ed is as much important as anything else. I greet my kids at the door every day with a handshake, eye contact. When we say the pledge, we stand appropriately for it with hand behind our back, hand across our chest. Like, these are incredible opportunities that you'll see throughout the year develop kids into young adults, at least in the fourth grade level. And it's just, it's amazing to see things that you point out. You decide you are going to make a marquee thing of your year just end up turning into something that the kids just completely devour and just embody. It's an amazing thing.
Absolutely. So, Matt, I mean, you know, we've been through it tonight, man. I mean, we've been up and down and back and forth, having Ken on. It's been a roller coaster second episode, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't give our advice for this first month of school, a real brief piece of advice that can be taken away from our experiences. So I'll turn to you. You know, if you could give any teacher advice over the course of your first 10 years in this profession, what would that be?
Well, I think, so Mike and I won't say we've planned weddings before. Our wives have definitely taken most of that. But if you have the opportunity to plan a wedding, it seems like a never-ending to-do list. And that is for a, I don't want to say selfish reason, but it is for a personal reason. When it comes to getting started the classroom, and my advice is you always need to keep kids in the forefront. I know that echoes what Ken says, but my advice really goes to the idea of you're going to show up on that first day of school, and whether you got everything done, if it's perfect, which it never is, whether you have everything cut out and laminated and posted, it doesn't matter anymore when they walk up to that door. You could have an empty classroom with nothing. You could have a classroom that had every gadget, every flashy item possible. It doesn't matter. You turn it on day one, the kids will love you. The kids are going to remember you as that year teacher for the rest of their lives. So take that opportunity, take advantage of it, and make it the best you can.
You know, I 100% agree with everything you said. And, you know, if I could give listeners a piece of advice, it would be you're going to prepare your classroom. You're going to prepare your lessons. You're going to prepare your schedule. You're going to prepare your before the school day starts schedule, your after the school day starts schedule. But what Matt said about putting the students at the forefront of your mind is so important. The advice that I would give to you is that for the next 180 days, when they walk through that door and they're sitting at those desks for the first time and their eyes are looking right at you, those are your kids. That's your family. They're each other's family. And it's important to set that tone for them from the start. This is our family. We protect one another. We care about one another. We keep one another safe. My expectations for you, our expectations of each other, are the same today as they will be on day 180. Whatever those expectations that you build as a community, help each other to hold one another accountable to that. Help each other to support one another in that. Because, you know, if you can teach your kids to look at one another and support one another through their difficult moments, meeting those expectations, then you've truly created that family. And that starts on day one. And that's the advice that I would give to you. Let them know that they're family. Let them know that they're there for one another, to support one another, to meet the expectations of the classroom and the school as a whole. Because if you can do that, then you're set. Everything else is going to fall right into place. And that's what Matt and I are hoping to help you achieve, is finding ways to do that. And Ken was a great start for us.
And depend on one another, fellow teachers, friends. We're all in it together. So thank you for being a part of this journey. Hopefully it's all going well. Reach out. Let us know how it's going. And we hope you have an unbelievable school year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, make sure that you're using us as a resource. Make sure you use Ken as a resource. You know, he gave your Twitter. We'll always end with ours. I am A Price, SDOL. That's how you can find me on Twitter. Matt?
Ed Tech Neighbor. And the most important is our podcast one, which is @pod_faculty_room. So.
Absolutely. Guys, we want to thank you once again for checking out our second episode. We'll be back next week, and we'll be back with more resources and another guest to help fill your toolbox. We're so thankful that you're with us tonight, and we hope you have a great rest of the week.